How many plays have you done over the years?
Oh, many. Many, many, many.
Would you do another one? Should we do a play? And put it up somewhere and do it as like a fundraiser someday?
That'd be great.
No business like show business like show business.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Power Funny Hour.
I think that was almost it.
It was almost it. This is our 1 o'clock hour where we talk about entertainment. We have human interest stories. We have some fun. And today is no difference. In our next segment, last month we went through 100 different pieces of advice to improve your life without really trying.
Yeah, little things.
And now I thought we were going to go through Emily Post 2023.
She exists in 20. Okay.
But The Cut, which is part of New York Magazine, put out 194 new etiquette rules.
Oh, man.
On how to text, how to tip, how to ghost, how to host, and how to generally exist in polite society today.
Lovely.
So instead of reading it all 194, I thought we'd take them bit by bit, and just like we did last month, discuss the advice. And so we'll kick off with one or two of those today. And then our guest in the bottom of the hour is from Milton House. And so Caitlin Kloss is the executive director at the Milton House Museum in Milton, Wisconsin. And if you are unfamiliar, the Milton House Museum is the only certified Underground Railroad site in Wisconsin that is still open to the public.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is. Have you been?
I haven't.
I haven't been either, but I made a video about this 2 years ago, and because someone said, they were like, oh, this is still really cool. Because I'd always known that, obviously, as you, the Underground Railroad, as you're trying to get to Canada, that there were routes through Wisconsin.
Sure.
And so I'm excited to hear more about, one, what did that route look like? Because I think, since Milton's over by Janesville, and kind of how people, where were people coming from that they would go get to Milton House? Because then I think they would
go into Minnesota?
I don't think they went to Minnesota. I think they went up to Lake Michigan.
Oh.
I think they went over.
Oh.
But I could be wrong.
Well, we'll find out.
We'll find out more history of that, but also what the tours are look like and how you can support and how you can go check out Milton House. So that's coming up at 1:30. But first, Grammys kind of snuck up on me.
Did they?
I didn't know the Grammys were last night.
There didn't seem to be a whole lot of, I mean, I saw some promotion, but not as much as you usually see about something like the Oscars.
No, yeah, I don't even remember hearing about when the Grammy nominations came out. And I know that the Grammys are always around this time because, and it will always be seared in my brain that they're around this time because in 2020, when the day Kobe died was the day of the Grammys. And we had plans. So I was still living in LA at that point. It was like right before, it was a month or two before I was coming back to Wisconsin. And I have a good friend who is an entertainment lawyer who works with musicians in LA. And he invited a group of us to come down to their party, like their firm's party that was at one of the hotels. It's right by what was the Staples Center, which is now the crypto.com arena.
Which is so stupid. God, that's stupid.
Staples Center really rolls off the tongue a lot easier.
Crypto Center.
But, and we still went, but it was also, I mean, we also went because the amount of people who had made their way downtown in honor of Kobe. And
yeah.
So I do know, like in my brain, I know that the Grammys are always end of January, early February. But really, I was on Twitter yesterday and Grammy stuff started popping up, especially the Queen Bee. I was like, oh gosh, this is on right now.
Whoops.
And so my apologies that, my pop culture aficionados who, might be disappointed in me that I was not more aware and in tune with the Grammys happening, but that doesn't mean we're not going to spend this segment talking a little bit about the biggest stories that happened. The biggest one, of course, being Beyonce is now the record holder for the most amount of Grammys won by a single artist.
That's both male and female.
Both male and female. And so she now has 32. And she won 4 last night, including Best Dance Electronic Album for Renaissance. And that was the one that put her over. But what's funny, whoops, she won earlier in the night, but she wasn't actually there yet.
She was running late.
She's running a little late because of traffic. And so, but yeah, so now she is the most decorated artist in Grammy history. And she beat, is it George Solti? And he is a conductor. He's a classical conductor. And he had 31. And I saw someone, I don't want to get into it too much, but someone got in, like, made the point that she didn't reference him at all in her speech. Which,
that's kind of a different category. I mean, I understand he was the most winningest, but that's an entirely different category of music.
Well, and also, I mean, do we have a clip of her? No. Okay.
The song we do have, I've got bumps pulled for all the rest of the show.
So in her speech, she was clearly overwhelmed and she was very emotional. And she got up and she said, like, I want to receive this night. And, you know, she thanked the queer community for creating the genre because she had won for Dance Electronic Album. And she thanked her Uncle Johnny, who I'm assuming was a part of the queer community.
Yep.
And she thanked her children and everything. And, like, I mean, this is a woman who, the fact that she's never won Album of the Year, because she lost again last night to Harry Styles. And granted, I don't think Renaissance is not my favorite Beyonce album. I listen to it. I like it. There's some jams on there.
Yeah.
To me, Lemonade is still out of this world for me. But the fact that she's been nominated 4 times for Album of the Year and she's never won. And she really is, even if you don't love her music, it's hard to argue that she's not the most influential living artist we have right now.
Without a doubt.
The way she's reinvented herself, the way that she, the artistry of how she approaches everything that she does and the conception, like the conceptual risks she takes with her performances and everything. Like, she is on a different level than almost every living artist, I think.
And I just want to throw this in there because I'm not a good person. That has to drive Madonna nuts, which makes me so happy.
Oh, were you never a Madonna fan?
No.
You never?
No.
Wow.
Never, ever, no.
What do your gay friends think about that? I would imagine that really upsets some of them.
I'd like Liza Minnelli.
Okay.
So I would take Liza over Madonna.
I appreciate Madonna. I mean, the truth is, Madonna can't hold a candle to Beyonce's voice. Like, Madonna as a performer, I appreciate. Some of her songs are still, like A Prayer is still one of my favorite songs. So it's interesting that you went there. But I don't, you know, did Taylor Swift win anything last night? Or was her album released too late into the year to be nominated for this?
Because it did come out kind of late.
It came up in October, right? And so she was there. I saw her standing up and applauding during Beyonce's speech.
And she was dancing.
Yeah.
And she won a Grammy for Best Music Video for All Too Well, the short film.
So it must have been, because I don't know what the cutoff is for the Grammys. And so she might be for next year, which would have been a tactical move on her part as far as trying to.
True.
Because as the, I would say, when it comes to pop dominant artists, she is probably the top white female artist, and Beyonce is the top black female artist, and those two get pitted against each other a fair amount.
Right.
So the music industry people were probably smart enough to be like, let's separate. If Beyonce's thing is this summer, we will move this to later and deal with it next year.
And I do believe that Taylor Swift is that aware.
I agree.
She's a very savvy woman.
She's a very savvy woman. But some other notable moments from last night: Harry Styles won Album of the Year, which I think he was as surprised as everyone else was. Viola Davis became an EGOT winner.
Isn't that cool?
And
explain what that is.
So EGOT is when an artist wins an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. And so she's an actress. And so she's won the other three for acting. but she won a Grammy for best narration for a book, for an audiobook.
Her book, yeah.
Her book, yeah. And so now I want to go listen to that. But what else? Do we have Lizzo's speech?
We do.
Let's play a little bit of that.
I want to dedicate this award to Prince. My niece is sick. When we lost Prince, I decided to dedicate my life to making positive music. And I was like, I don't care if my positivity bother you, what's wrong with you? And this was at a time when positive music and feel-good music wasn't mainstream at that point, and I felt very misunderstood. I felt on the outside looking in, but I stayed true to myself because I wanted to make the world a better place, so I had to be that change to make the world a better place. I'd like to believe that not only can people do good, but we just are good. We are good inherently. And anybody at home who feels misunderstood or on the outside looking in like I did, just stay true to yourself, because I promise you, you will find people, you will attract people in your life who believe in you and support you. I want to thank y'all for believing in me and supporting me.
She did have a big tribute to Beyonce, mm-hmm. which had quite a fair amount of profanity in it.
So we're like, oh, we can't play that one.
So we got to skip that one, but she really pointed to Beyonce's influence,
yeah.
and how influential she has been on so many artists.
I love Lizzo. I love how Lizzo is so unapologetically herself.
Yeah.
And loud and proud and big. And I mean that both literally and metaphorically. She is a treasure.
And if you haven't seen, and I hadn't seen it until I pulled the clip this morning, the video from the song that she won for, which is About Damn Time, it's really worth a watch.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I think you get such a good taste of her essence and playfulness, and it's just really endearing.
Absolutely. And then the other notable, no, not a winner, not a performance, but no one looked less happy to be at the Grammys than Ben Affleck.
Seriously. What was he being punished for?
I don't know. But I mean, Jenna, in all the pictures they snapped, it's not like J-Lo looked much happier either. But the tweets that showed up as far as how he would so much rather be at Dunkin' Donuts right now than the Grammys. Check out Ben Affleck Grammys. Google it. Do yourself a favor. It'll remind you that your day is not that bad. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be right back.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are marching towards the end of the show. It's really flown by today.
It has.
In the next segment, we are going to be talking to Keaton Kloss, who is the executive director of the Milton House Museum. But this segment, we're going to talk a little bit about etiquette. But first, Jane, you said we got a text?
We got a text I wanted to share from the 414, and I've checked, and it's not any of my relatives. Kristen, you and Jane make some of today's best radio. I consider your program to be educational and informative, energetic, and very, very motivated. Keep up the good work. Charlie was great, by the way, especially with his special Packer guest. Have a marvelous Monday. Thank you so very much.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that nice? Just a little unsolicited praise.
That is...
makes our day.
If it's 414, it's definitely not Debbie Bry. So we know that much.
And it's not any of my sisters.
And so thank you so much. We aim to please. But I would say that is... everything you wrote in there is what... you know, all the hours of trying to balance the show between fiery complaints at the top when I'm complaining, why can we not let the election integrity thing go, to BSing about the Grammys.
Exactly.
And so it's the range is purposeful to have a little bit of everything for anyone. So thank you. We appreciate that text. And so now I'm excited to see how much you and I agree or disagree.
All right.
On all of these.
These are etiquette questions.
So this is from New York Magazine. New York Magazine's incredible, I would say, as far as, you know, this is, you know, a very elite top tier publication. That this is the same publication, I'm pretty sure, that brought you the Nepo Baby expose.
That sounds about right, yeah.
So they have now done, this came out for the February issue, and the headline is, "Do you know how to behave? Are you sure? How to text, tip, ghost, host, and generally exist in polite society today." So it is 194 updated rules on how to do all of those things, and... We're going to do
194 right now.
We're going to take it may be too many to even get through in a month, but I figure it's a nice replacement for what we were doing last month as far as tips to improve your life. This is kind of tips to improve your life, but I think there could be a little bit more discussion on whether or not we think this is what etiquette actually says for us today.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
And so the first one, I think we only have time to do one today, but so the first whole section is friends and lovers. And it's funny that they started with this one because I think this also speaks to the type of crowd that Manhattanites and New York Magazine writers and editors are circling.
Right.
Because the first one is, you don't have to read everyone's book. Life is finite. We can't be expected to spend all of our time metabolizing content by friends or friends of friends. Still, if you encounter someone who has recently produced something creative and you don't feel like telling them you haven't gotten around to engaging with it, say something about how impressive it is that they've created something in the first place. Quote, "What a feat," with a cheerful hand gesture, is always effective. "What a feat" also works well if you saw your friend's show and hated it. Just don't overplay your hand and try to get into specifics. But if you do consume their artistic product, send them a nice note. They'll remember it forever. And I'm just saying, like, I have one friend who's written a book. And I know I have some other, one close friend who's written a book.
Okay.
I probably know more that it's like, oh yeah, you did write a book or something. But I guess creative feat
can cover a lot of things.
But it is funny to me that was the first one, because I'm sure people who write and edit The New Yorker have a lot of friends who do incredible creative feats.
Well, that's just so New York-y. I mean, come on. I have a couple of acquaintances that I know have read books.
But I think this, if I apply this to, you know, I don't listen to our colleagues' show every single day.
Not all of them.
Right? And so we work on a creative, informative medium, and it's not like we have time to necessarily listen to all of our colleagues' shows. I certainly can't read all of every article of the people I work with at Journal Sentinel and some of their investigative pieces and such. And so I think,
well, you probably could if you didn't bathe or eat or breathe or
do other things. And so I think the wide application of how to acknowledge someone's effort into something where it is possible for you to have read it or consumed it or watched it or listened to it, but just haven't yet that's a lot of work. Like, that seems really impressive. Is a good answer.
It's an okay answer. I would just, I would caution people to be careful about getting caught that you didn't read it or see it or listen to it, because over the years, I've had many, many, many people, usually salespeople, come up to me and say, "Oh, I listened to your show today, and you said that thing that was so funny." "Oh, thank you. What time?" "Oh, I don't know. What was it about?" I don't know. But you said that thing that was made me laugh.
Okay.
Thank you for that. And again, that's better than saying, "I listened to your show today and you were terrible." But be careful how you hedge it so you don't get busted.
Yeah. Well, I think if you could also say, like, "I haven't been able to listen yet, but it's so..." I feel like I've had some people say that to me. They're like, 3 hours is a lot. 3 hours is a lot of radio every day. And, you know, again, we're on from 11 to 2. So there's a lot of people who are working during the day.
Sure.
And so, you know, I think they're, I don't have the expectation, but the acknowledgement of, oh, that seems like a lot of work. And you're like, thank you. It is a lot of work. And we put a lot into it. And so there you go. If you have feedback on that piece of advice, whether or not you think that is appropriate for Emily Post in the 21st century, let us know. 844-967-2789. When we come back, we are going to be talking about the Milton House Museum and talking to the executive director from there. So if you have any questions about the history of that place, you can also text those in now. 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin. A reminder that if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com or wherever you find podcasts. And as always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And so with it is Black History Month, and Wisconsin has a lot of Black history, including being a part of the Underground Railroad. And so we have a rich abolitionist history as far as, especially, you know, the Waukesha Freeman started as abolitionist newspaper.
Well, Freeman, that should be, yeah, I guess, exactly. That should be a hint.
And so we wanted to invite on the executive director of the Milton House Museum in Milton, Wisconsin, Caitlin Kloss, who, because it is the last station in Wisconsin that is open to the public that was part of the Underground Railroad. And so we wanted to hear more about the past and the present of Milton House. So welcome to the show, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. And so for anyone who's not familiar with Milton House, what is kind of the background of what it was and what role it played for people who were taking this specific path to get to, I'm assuming, Canada?
Yeah, definitely trying to get out of the United States, especially after the 1850s with the passing of the Fugitive Slave Law, just getting into a free state after that. Really wasn't good enough anymore. So Canada becomes a big route. So really quick, the Milton House was built in 1844 as a stagecoach inn, so basically like a hotel, by Joseph Goodrich, who moves here from New York. And he starts, as far as we know, he kind of starts operating it as Underground Railroad as soon as he builds it. Our freedom seeker that we know by name comes in 1861, and that's Andrew Pratt. And he comes up from Arkansas. And interesting with Andrew is that he comes in 1861, and unlike most freedom seekers, he actually stays in Milton for about 4 or 5 years before he eventually moves on to Minnesota. So he's unique because he doesn't actually continue on to Canada. But you are right. Most people by the 1850s, if they're on the Underground Railroad, they're most likely trying to get north into Canada. Wisconsin was not a main route on the Underground Railroad. We're a little too far west. Kind of the Great Lakes were a good way to get into Canada. So, you know, like Maryland, I think Maryland has the most Underground Railroad sites still today. But like Ohio, New York, they were much more common routes. But people coming from more like the Arkansas, Missouri area, coming up the Mississippi River, and then they would come east across Wisconsin trying to get to the Great Lakes and head up into Canada. So that's kind of where we play a role in that route.
So that's what it would be people coming up from the Mississippi, and then they basically traverse from west to east and go basically to like Lake Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Milwaukee was a big place to get to, because then you could, obviously, you're right on the water. People could take, you know, obviously tons of different routes. It's an interesting thing because the Underground Railroad, obviously, a lot of it today is we try and piece together like bits and pieces that we have to try and make a whole story. And so it's interesting because like we don't even know where Joseph sent the person to next, like that. Part of history has been lost. So we know people came to him, and then, you know, we assume that he moved them east, but we can't say, okay, then their next stop was X, which is not uncommon for Underground Railroad sites.
Just because of safety?
Because so much of your so much of your history, they weren't writing it down, right? Because it was secret. Even after the war and slavery was made illegal, obviously there's still a lot of racial tension and all that. So still, you weren't like, I helped on the Underground Railroad. That was still something you kind of kept close to your chest. So unfortunately, we just lost so much of that history as people died. They kind of just took those stories with them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Caitlin, when they arrived here, I mean, and I know, again, you're trying to piece things together without having a lot of documentation about it, but were they moved at night? Did they hide them in wagons under things? Did they, you know, how were people moved from place to place?
So how we think it worked at the Milton House is Joseph's brother Anson had a basically a ferry on a lake just north of Milton, Lake Koshkonong. So if you were traveling like from Janesville and you wanted to go to Madison at that time, the fastest way was on Anson's ferry because he would take you across Lake Koshkonong. So we believe that he would get people off the water, put them in a wagon, most likely kind of have them lay down, and then put stuff on top of them that needed to be delivered to the Milton House, like maybe hay or sacks of potatoes, food, stuff. And then the wagon would be driven to the Milton House. And then we had cabins out back that were like the warehouse, storehouse, kitchen. So you would unload all that cargo, and along with the human cargo, they would go into the one cabin that is connected to the Milton House via the tunnel. And they would use that tunnel to go to the cellar of the Milton House, and that's where they would stay until that process was reversed and they were moved on. And since we were a stagecoach in, we had 25 stagecoaches coming every day, all throughout the day, a wagon pulling up at a random time or, you know, didn't really raise any eyebrows. People are like, oh, okay, they're probably just getting ready for the next, you know, stagecoach or whatever. So it was a very busy place, but it worked as a good cover for what Joseph was doing and moving people.
We're talking to Keaton Kloss from the Milton House Museum over in Milton, Wisconsin. And so kind of moving through history after it was no longer needed because there was no more slavery. What did it take as far as, because as we say, it's the last Underground Railroad station in Wisconsin that you can still tour. And so obviously that insinuates that there were others. But as far as the preservation of Milton House to keep it intact and a place that people can still visit and learn from today, what was kind of, who was in charge of potentially like trying to keep this thing as a historical place that we can go take advantage of learning from?
Well, definitely, I would say a big part of it was the Milton community. And even to this day, members of the community have a very strong sense of ownership of the house and are very supportive of it, very proud of it. And so they definitely played a big part. After Joseph dies in 1867, his son Ezra takes over. He kind of operates it until he passes away in the early 1910s. And then the Goodrich family owns it, but it, over the next, you know, like few years, it just kind of is run. It was a dormitory for the college for a while. Businesses were operating out of it. It just kind of switched hands and all that. By 1948, the building was kind of in disrepair, and actually a portion of it actually collapses. So the Milton Historical Society is developed to purchase the building and basically save it. So they save the hexagon and the first block, which those are the ones, you know, hexagon's very important. That's where the tunnel connects. So they take it over in 1948. It takes them until 1954 to get it put back to a position where it could even be open to the public. And so then since 1954, the Milton Historical Society has owned and operated the building. We are a nonprofit 501c3, so donations and tour revenue and event revenue is how we keep our doors open. So that's always an experience, for sure. And so it took a lot of work, and when we were first formed, like in the 1940s, it was a volunteer organization. And even we were certified as a National Historic Landmark, which a big part of that was because we could prove our Underground Railroad connection was done in 1998. But that was after over a decade of work by volunteers, like doing research, going to conferences all across the country, usually on their own dime, them, you know, reaching out and doing all of this work took at least a decade and a lot of money to get us certified and on the, you know, National Historic Register. So that it's a huge commitment on the time of a lot of really dedicated volunteers, the community. Like I said, when we were becoming a museum in the 1940s, they just kind of put a call out, like, if you have stuff to donate to the museum, to be a museum, please do. So a lot of people donated. People came with their own paintbrushes and helped, you know, paint and clean up from the collapse and everything. And then just all these amazing, passionate volunteers who I'm the only full-time staff member still. We still are so dependent on amazing volunteers, but it's definitely a lot of work, but it's one that we feel is so vital, especially in today's world, to tell this story, this positive story of Black history. And we're very happy to be able to tell it.
And so what was your path to becoming the executive director? I can see, for anyone who's watching the live stream, they can see, but if you're listening, Keaton has a lot of Abraham Lincoln busts behind her and maybe a coffee mug. And so are you a history buff, or what was your kind of path being that you wanted to be the executive director of Milton House?
Yeah, I am a huge history nerd. I've just learned to kind of lean into that at this point. I've always just been really drawn to the Civil War. I have a public history degree from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. So basically anything history outside of the classroom. So museums, libraries, national parks, anything like that. Civil War, kind of that 1850s to 1870s. So right before the Civil War through like Reconstruction's, the area that really interests me. So I got my degree from Whitewater, and then I worked for about 5 years at the Rock County Historical Society in Janesville, which operates the Lincoln Tolman House. It's the only house in Wisconsin that is still standing that Abraham Lincoln ever slept in.
Oh, wow.
So I was there for about 5 years, and then this position came open, and I was lucky enough to interview and get offered the position. And so I just celebrated my 3-year anniversary like 2 days ago, speaking the director. So, thank
awesome.
You.
Congratulations. That's
so
great.
I feel very, very blessed because, you know, Wisconsin, it's not a huge state that has a ton of history museums or history positions open, at least paid ones. So the fact that I've been able to work at two sites in my time period close to me is just really great. And I'm just so excited about all the stuff we have planned for the Milton House.
I just want to say, Caitlin, that, you know, we talk about a lot of news on this show, and there's a lot of bad news, and we try and break things down. But hearing the story of the Milton House and what the community did in banding together to keep it and how that still exists today just makes me feel better about humans. So thank you for that.
Good. Yeah, I know, even like I said, I started right before everything shut down because of COVID, and I would have community members just calling the museum just, how are you? Are you guys okay? Like, what can we do? What do you guys need? We just want to check on you. And so that was, you know, a lot of people, when they got those stimulus checks, they were giving some of that money to us because they didn't necessarily need it, but they knew we did. And so, yeah, I mean, the Milton community is just wonderful. And I agree. It's very heartwarming and encouraging too.
Absolutely. So I do want to get to how people can take a tour and events that are coming up. But quickly, I just wanted to point out your intentional use of the word freedom seeker instead of runaway slave. And so can you tell people why it is important, why words matter, and why you would use that word instead of runaway slave?
Thank you for bringing that up, because I'm a big yes. Words matter. And freedom seeker is what we use because saying runaway, fugitive, anything like that, escape slave, it implies that they were doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And they were not doing anything wrong. Yes, by the laws of the day, it was wrong. But in a human moral standpoint, it was not wrong. They had every right to have freedom, and they had every right to seek that. So I love, you technically call them freedom seekers while they're on their journey. When they make it to freedom, then you call them a freedom maker. It also puts the emphasis on what the freedom seeker was doing themselves, because a lot of them did this by themselves or with the help of other Blacks. It was their own initiative. They were doing the work. They were and I think that's important. White people obviously helped, but they weren't the key. The formerly enslaved people are the ones that were key in making this decision and making it happen. So saying enslaved instead of a slave, because they weren't, slavery wasn't who they were. It was something that was done to them, but they were so much more than that. And freedom seeker, freedom maker, those terms matter so much.
Yeah. And that's why as soon as you said that, I was like, well, we should probably point that out, because I think there's a lot of people who wouldn't, because that's not how we took history classes. Right. And so,
yeah. And I just kind of normally use that word now. I'll say freedom seeker, and I get people like, wait, what, back up, what are you talking about? So I appreciate you pointing that out.
Absolutely. So before we let you go, it's scheduled tours. So if people want to go see Milton House, if they want to give any of the events that are coming up, what should people know?
So definitely check out our website, which is www.miltonhouse.org. Right now in the winter, yes, we are open for tours. We just need a little bit of advance notice because we have volunteers who graciously come in to do the tours. So we need to schedule with them. Come during the summer, June, July, and August. We are open Tuesday through Sunday, 10 to 4, and you can just walk in. We have phenomenal high school students who give tours during the summer. And on our website, too, you'll see we have a variety of special events from Civil War Days in May to Twilight Tours in September to a Christmas Carol play in December. We have stuff happening all year round, so there's all kinds of fun ways to come join. And then, obviously, donations are big to help us operate, and we're always looking for volunteers as well. So a lot of ways to get involved.
Absolutely, and we will link all of that to today's show notes. Keaton Kloss, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So you can check out the Milton House, go see a tour, donate to them, learn more about them. We will link all of it in today's notes. And when we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We got Jane Matinere on the board. Good Monday show.
Yeah, we had a great show.
Amazing what sleep will do.
It helps, doesn't it?
It helps. It's also just, you know, you and I sometimes talk about the machine of what are we going to talk about, you know, and each day coming in and the ability to sometimes just sleep and trust that we'll find things to talk about and that you don't have to over-prepare. And because last night I did watch The Last of Us.
Are you
watching it?
I'm not.
Ooh.
Is it good? Is it really gory?
It's actually not that gory. I was having this conversation with a girlfriend as we drove to a baby shower this weekend. First of all, the third episode, which was last Sunday, which was Nick Offerman. And I'm forgetting the excellent actor who was also in the first season of White Lotus. It was basically in a 1 hour play. The acting, the storytelling, everything was so excellent. And so I think, cause I never got into Walking Dead.
Neither did I.
I don't know if I've ever even seen an episode of Walking Dead, and like World War Z and like the swarming nature of zombie things are kind of like meh, but anyone who is a Last of Us purist will remind you that they're not zombies.
Oh, there's something else. A mutation of something.
It's a mutation, and it's basically the fungi that is taking over. It's like jumped species. It's a real thing, but it infects insects and ants. And what it does to ants is now the sci-fi leap for both the video game and the series, is that it could jump to humans.
Human beings that have been horribly mutated by a parasitic fungus.
Yes.
Known as cordyceps brain infection.
But my friend who is a scientist and a doctor, well, she's not a doctor, but she has her PhD in, I think, biology. We were with them on Friday and she was like, this could never happen. This is not how fungi spreads. And
always someone coming to be a killjoy. Yes. on the TV show.
But people will be they're not zombies, so don't call them zombies. Oh,
okay.
But anyways, so in the first two episodes, because there's four so far, certainly there is. It's the same thing if you've ever watched Stranger Things or any kind of fantasy sci-fi where the visual effects and the makeup artists and the special effects people and what they've created really give you the ick.
Yeah.
Of like, how did someone even come up with what this creature looks like?
What do you dream about at night?
Yeah. And because truly, Pedro Pascal was the host for SNL this weekend. And I know that they did. I saw a time lapse video of the SNL who, and granted the SNL makeup artists and what they create, especially in a week to use once.
Yeah.
Is wild. And they had a time-lapse video of them recreating one of these like heads, because it truly is. It's like fungus that starts growing out of people's heads, except they're still walking around and are violent and whatever. So the first two episodes are a little bit more of the scare jump, like on the edge of your seat, a little tense.
Very tense.
Versus the third episode is almost like an anthology of how it can exist by itself without the main characters that you're watching, and it's beautiful.
I know, it's got a huge following.
You could watch, if you don't want to watch the whole season, you could watch just that.
Just the third episode?
To appreciate the performances and the storytelling. And I would recommend doing it because it is that good. And then last night's episode really wasn't, I don't know if we saw any of the infected humans. Sorry for spoilers. But as far as, it's really good storytelling. It's really good character-driven storytelling. And what I like about it is I think, as we're going to get deeper into it, because I'm not a gamer, I didn't play this game, but I think that's why the game was all, what I've been hearing and reading is that's why the game was so popular, is because of the storytelling.
Oh.
And it's also being hailed as one of, if not the only movie/TV show that has been able to take a video game and do it well. And, you know, the Tomb Raiders and some of the other games that they've tried to bring to screen
have no plot, basically,
yeah,
or a really thin plot.
I guess it'll be really interesting to see how the new Mario Brothers will be. Chris Pratt should never have been cast to voice Mario. He sounds nothing like what Mario is supposed to sound.
What we hear in our heads, right?
Me, Mario.
Yeah, no.
Who is this guy? But I did not think I would like it. And so far, I've gotten to the point of, and HBO just has a way of doing this with their Sunday night shows. I just had this conversation about, you know, when we think of the height of Game of Thrones, because you never really got into that one either.
I did watch it.
You did watch it.
I did.
So it's like the anticipation to each Sunday, because what's going to happen? And I don't know if there's another network, streaming or still on TV, that consistently does it as well as HBO does it. At least for me and my Sunday nights, there has been no other. Do we call it a channel now? Because even though it's HBO Max is streaming, I don't know if there's anything that's, because I was the same way. I don't necessarily think so far House of the Dragon is as good as Game of Thrones was, but I certainly every Sunday was looking forward to what happens next.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm hook, line, and sinker there with The Last of Us now, and Pedro Pascal is top five. He's so dreamy.
Ooh. Oh, well, now I will.
Such a good actor.
Now I will definitely check out the dreamy Pedro Pascal.
But yeah,
but appointment viewing, that's what it's called, and HBO would be delighted to hear you say that.
But, and we're so not, especially my age and younger, right? Everything is on demand now of the streaming all episodes as soon as you sit down and watch Netflix, because they release all of it at once.
Mm-hmm.
Going back. Because even things that air on primetime on CBS, ABC, NBC, you can go back and watch in a myriad of different ways. So it doesn't feel as pressing, you know, this show, because I know everyone feels that way about this show. They can't wait for 11 a.m. every day.
Absolutely.
You could listen to it as a podcast. And if you miss it, you can go back and, as we say, every single day. If you miss any part of the show, you can go back and listen to it as a podcast. But there's something about that appointment watching of HBO that's still there.
And it's also called the art of the tease.
Yeah.
And that's how they get you. And they get you to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll give you this little bit, but then you got to come back if you want to get more.
I'm trying to think. What's my tease for tomorrow? I'm trying to, what do we have?
Kristen sets herself on fire. Tune in at 11:20, and then we'll tell you why.
Boom. How's that for an ending? All right. Stick around for Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, or the Chad Holmes Show. That this has been As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. We will be back at 11 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday. That's all, folks.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.